are back with episode 704 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I actually think I've been in that club. It is a lot of fun.
Oh, boy. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here and say that giving a rousing speech doesn't usually mean very much when there's a nuclear holocaust about to take place. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But maybe just not me. Maybe not. All right. We are going to be finishing up the episodic discussion for this week, and then we're going to get into a little bit of feedback, and who knows what's going to happen after that. So, Edmund, first you need to give a disclaimer, right?
Absolutely. We will discuss all sorts of things that might have happened in these episodes, so there's a very, very strong possibility that you'll be spoiled if you haven't seen them.
That's right. And we're going to go ahead and jump right in it here with the first of these episodes that we need to get through, and that is... Orphan Black, Season 4, Episode 7, The Anti-Socialism of Sex. Sarah goes back to old habits to cope with her decisions, and Cosima attempts a Hail Mary back at the lab. And this one coming in at an average of 8. And, we both gave this one an 8, and didn't seem to have very much to say about it, though.
I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, this was, if I remember right, yeah, I think we're sort of in at the midpoint of the season. This whole, Sarah sort of having her dark night of the soul, did kind of feel like a bit of a narrative pause, as well as being a bit of an emotional blowout and catharsis after all that's been happening, with the various dyad machinations and Susan getting deposed and Evie Choi taking over Sarah having a bit of a backslide into her old more hedonistic habits at the same time sort of coming and you know it felt like at the end sort of coming through and coming to some sort of reconciliation with Beth and the ghost of Beth that she's been wrestling with since the beginning. And that kind of made sense to me because she did kind of get thrown into all of this back in that at the very beginning of the series, seeing Beth take her own life and all that that she got thrown into as a result of that. Kind of felt like, sort of necessary catharsis for her to work through that, get to the verge of wanting to take the same path as Beth, but then make it out the other side to try and deal with the situation however they can, since we've certainly reached a point where everything they've been trying has been crashing and burning around them. So I guess but for that slight little glimmer of hope, which I really kind of wasn't expecting, that Delphine was shot but actually stuffed into a van still alive. I guess it's just the slightest little glimmer there. Cleansing of the palate. And now that the new battle lines have been set and some unusual alliances with Rachel, apparently, possibly a reluctant addition to the team in some capacity. I'm feels like they were taking the first half of the season to rejigger things and put the focus squarely where it needs to be on Clone Club, and now we can see how they can work their way out of this.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. I can't really think of anything to add to that. So.
Okay. I did feel the need to look it up myself, but rather amazing performer at the club is a singer songwriter by the name of Peaches, if you want to look her up. And that was her own costume she brought to the shoot.
Very nice. All right, let's see here. Next on the list is Daredevil, Season 2, Episode 11.380. Karen starts working with Frank to bring the mysterious blacksmith down. Claire quits her job as the hospital's administration are trying to keep her silent. Matt visits Madame Gao to get information on blacksmith. And yeah, this one coming in at an average of 8, with Henry saying, I have a series of questions regarding the Hans plan that the show proper doesn't seem to want to give concrete answers to. At least not yet.
They're Asian and inscrutable, Henry. That's just the way it's supposed to be.
That's right. That's right. For me, what was interesting of this episode was how Matt was slowly but surely trying to compromise with the Punisher. And it's like trying to no, you're just not going to get him to meet you halfway.
No,
it's not how it works. But anyway,
it's the good Catholic boy in him. He just can't help it.
I suppose so. I suppose. I mean, he even crossed himself at one point.
Yes,
oh,
he did.
Poor soul. yeah, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, well, I mean, speaking of the Punisher, I mean, it's something that's come up previously. I mean, like, you know, Matt and Frank's little rooftop idyll earlier in the season. But I've been rather struck. I mean, as we go through the season, it's just absolutely no surprise that that they greenlit the idea of Punisher as its own series, because I think John Bernthal has just done just does this amazing job on these smaller scenes. Him with Karen in the diner. I mean the rapport with the waitress. That great line about do you always serve BS or is it just her? And then through the course of that attempted negotiation, but all of that back and forth with Matt before all of the gunfire and fireworks started. But the way he manages to still bring out the humanity in this, in incredibly violent, hardcore, no compromise character, has just been remarkable. As much as I've enjoyed, I enjoyed Vincent D'Onofrio's take on Fisk. I think Bernthal's just done an equally good, if not better, job of really fleshing out our villain, or however you want to term the Punisher. Our more extreme version of a hero who goes too far. Because he is one of those characters who sort of is a little bit ambiguous in the Marvel universe about whether he's a hero or a villain. Certainly the way they are pulling on the threads that they've built up through these two seasons, and with the return of Madame Gao and the Hand as major players again. I think the way they are bringing up the moral dilemmas, which have always been part of Daredevil, and the whole idea of how far do you have to go, trying to have principles against this sort of enemy, is that just going to get in your way? Certainly, as Punisher the Stick would argue, I think they're bringing that out to quite nicely, and it's certainly making me interested to see how they resolve it in the last couple.
Yeah, because there's a lot that needs to come together. I think I said that last time too, and I'm still not entirely sure that I feel differently now. I think that they really are going to need to work overtime in order to get these plot threads to come together, or they are banking fairly strongly on the idea that they'll have another season to explore some of these ideas even further later on. But I'm hoping that they're not that messy about the whole thing. And I really haven't heard too many complaints by the people who have already seen, obviously, the season.
Yes.
That it was left with huge gaping holes. So I'm curious how they're going to do it. And maybe it's just that certain things seem to have more prominence than they ultimately will. But we'll see. We'll see. All right. Next on the list is The Return of Powers, Season 2, Episode 1, Caracas, 1967. The world is turned upside down by the seemingly impossible and horrifying murder of Retro Girl. Pressure is on the Powers Division to bring the perpetrator to justice, but when Walker is pulled off the case for being too close to the victim, and maybe a suspect himself, he must go off books to avenge the woman he loved. Ooh, and this one also coming in at an average of 8. And I think it's maybe a little bit of a slow start to the season arc, but I have to say, the thing that jumped out at me, the supporting cast this season, pretty impressive.
Indeed. Yep.
I don't know if you have any other thoughts for this particular episode or agree, disagree.
I thought, I think to a certain extent, they were starting a little bit slow, but more to, I think perhaps with the idea that to get people who perhaps didn't watch the first season or didn't watch much of the first season, there was kind of a sense of, not necessarily resetting things, but sort of wanting to set the stage, after that first season that was a little bit uneven, certainly compared to just in terms of the production of the show, perhaps it's just a matter of they already had certain sets and things established, but I wasn't getting that sort of horrifically low budget sheen that was actually getting in the way at times at the beginning of that first season, I thought certainly the keeping the focus sort of so strictly on the murder and his reactions to it and sort of the back and forth within the Powers division, as well as the completely unsurprising imminent return of a new retro girl, which they were certainly setting up through all of that first season. I got the sense that it was sort of keeping the focus tighter for now, and then they may start filling in some more of the sort of wider world details and implications as they go along, but for now just keeping it more strictly and tightly plotted.
I really do hope that they maybe branch out a little bit more from what they did the first season. The first season I know was definitely affected by their budget constraints, but I think it's even obvious in this first episode that they have decided to throw a little bit more money at this.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will also allow them to spread their narrative wings a little bit more. Let's see. Then next on the list is Turn, Season 3, Episode 6, Many Mickles Make a Muckle. Washington attends Benedict Arnold's ball in Philadelphia, and Abe races to stop Rogers before he reaches Townsend. Meanwhile, old friends and enemies intersect.
Yes.
And this also came in at an average of 8. Poor Arnold. I know how this goes, but still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they are doing quite a good job of making him, not necessarily sympathetic, but understandable. And but certainly, yeah, and there was also something that was seeming a little strange to me, but they seem to be introducing Martha as a new love interest when, of course, they'd been married for many years when the Revolutionary War was underway.
Minor fudge.
Yeah.
No big deal, right?
Yeah, it was actually something that got confirmed to me later in the week. I mean, as I was watching it, there was something sort of niggling at me, like, wait a minute. And then I was at this... was reading something about Mount Vernon where it was mentioned when they actually met and got married, and it was like, oh yeah, okay, that's that's what was seeming strange to me. But that aside, what I actually found more intriguing was just the all of those strange machinations and miscommunications at the Townsend estate the ring just sort of feels like at the moment or certainly all, to all of its members feeling like it's just completely fallen apart, I thought it was a nice little reminder of that yes, this was literally the very early days of espionage, and they were kind of at times making things up as they went along, and this was certainly not their finest hour in terms of trying to keep the ring alive, and even though Simcoe hasn't actually caught the correct scent yet, was not the finest hour for the Culper ring there.
No, not entirely. And we had at least a little bit of Simcoe in this episode.
Yes.
Not as much as I would like. I just want Simcoe to go around and just terrify the hell out of people.
Well, he did do some of that.
I mean, it's just not everyone. I think he could have shown up at the ball and really made things interesting and awkward. That actor, I don't know if I'll ever be able to see him the same way ever again.
I mean, he's sort of the Joffrey of Turn.
Yes. All right. That brings us to a season finale here, and that is Arrow, Season 4, Episode 23, Schism. Season 4 ends with Oliver teaming up with...
You could call it that, yes.
Yeah. Season 4 ends with Oliver teaming up with a surprising force in an attempt to stop Damian Dark and his magic once and for all. And we had quite a few comments on this. I'll start with Nadim, and this is probably not a surprise to anybody. It wasn't atrocious, he says, but it was the final nail in the coffin in Arrow's downward spiral. Oof. Dean, not coming back, it seems, to watch Arrow. Henry, however, says, so the season's central conflict has been resolved a bit too cleanly, but at least it doesn't dissolve into a mess like sister show The Flash did with its finale. Oh, wow, just some real positive things here. And Gary goes on to say in his comment here, so now the team is more broke up than when the season began, and no one is in a happy place this time around. Here's hoping whatever will get the team back together will be good and just a bit more comic book related than Damian Dark. Yeah, you know, my whole take on that is, quite frankly, I don't know that this notion of magic in the Arrow part of the world really worked.
No, not at all.
I think that was fundamentally the problem. I think started off the discussion last episode with Supernatural and how they kind of had a very unusual way of ending the story that wasn't the usual bang, Winchester action. This time around, we had Arrow having to take a very unconventional stab at this, and it just didn't come together. Because, Damian Dark has the souls of 1,000 people that died in, or thousands of people that died in a nuclear explosion, which, by the way, nobody has mentioned.
Yes.
That again. Something like that. Explosion of a nuclear device on American soil, I think, would probably get people a little worked up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, especially since they only just barely diverted it, as near as I could tell.
Yes.
So, there are things like fallout and refugees and, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway.
Yeah. And so he's empowered by thousands of souls dying, and that's empowering Damian Dark. And then we get this. I can only assume that Oliver is being empowered by the goodwill and positive feedback from the.
Except they didn't do anything to establish that or make it clear.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying it with confusion. I don't know if that's what happened or not. It's kind of where my brain is going.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the kind of story that we expect from Arrow. And they didn't do a very good job of it accordingly. At least I don't think they did.
No,
and
no.
Yeah, so of course, I don't mind the idea that the team is all broken up again. I mean, this is a par for the course for a finale. But I'm just kind of wondering, like, okay, you've opened this door of magic. How are we going to close it again? Or put it where it belongs, which is probably
We are going to close it by making sure that they pick up Constantine and stuff all of that stuff over there.
Well, I would even argue that you could make a case for this being that magic being would be a better addition to Supergirl, because Kryptonians historically in the canon, and Gary would have to really back me up on this even further, they've always been vulnerable to magic. That's like, it's kryptonite and it's magic.
Right.
Those are the two biggies. So it would make sense for that to perhaps spill over in that particular part of the world. Legends of Tomorrow would seem like a really good other place for it to show up.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, Vandal Savage reincarnation, essentially magical alien comets that turned out to be powering all of that. But I really do think that, Arrow trying to introduce this was just the biggest misstep. I mean, this was the show that that was starting off the DCW. It was starting off as a show that was much more grounded in reality. It didn't have any superpowers. It was all just sort of the classic very well trained humans. You know, yes, to the point where they do things that may be completely unrealistic in the real world, but at least have a basis in reality. And then Flash was introduced, starting to introduce the more fantastical, if still science-based elements, and this attempt to bring magic and supernatural elements into it. I just think that, you know, and just evidenced by the fact that that they never felt comfortable in the way they were handling it with Damian Dark, and then the way that the flashbacks were a complete dud this season, just never seemed to introduce. I mean, we're way too slow, just never seemed to be actually introducing something that added to the storyline. It was just confirming stuff that was already happening in the main storyline. I think it's one of those things where. For whatever reason, I mean, whether it was the possibility of bringing Constantine in after that cancellation, or one of those ideas that seemed great at the time, but just never really translated into something that was going to work for this particular show.
Exactly, and at the end of the day, I also feel like there is. How do I put this? There's just too much expansion has taken place in too short of a time. And I think that it was all on the back of Arrow for all intent purposes. And I look forward to a season where they don't have to worry about how they're going to launch another show.
Right. Yes, that's right. I'm sorry. I was forgetting about that little stretch.
Yes, they need to, I think, really get the opportunity to get back to the roots of what Arrow was about, which was, you know, something a little more grounded. I thought that, you know, the Flash, we always said, was yes, it fit, but it was one step further into the comic book world.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, Legends of Tomorrow was like a giant leap into the comic book world. Supergirl also is going to be taking them into, very much a comic book step. So Arrow now has kind of like, as the starting point, was a more grounded look at this kind of property, and is now almost the odd man out, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it would make a lot more sense to go ahead and try to maintain some sense of identity at this stage of the game, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I hope that's where they go with this. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just thinking. In terms of some of the themes that they were bringing up at the end of this season, with this whole idea of how much death and destruction has been visited on Star City over the course of these seasons, almost having the sense of it's still part of this universe, but almost like Star City has become like the Detroit of the DCW. Where it's a place that's really trying to pick itself up, most people don't want to go there now, you know. So it's just the natives and the residents who are trying to pick it up while this more vibrant life is going on elsewhere.
Hmm. I just at the end of the day, I think that it would be better off leaving those other things to the other shows. Especially magic.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely magic. But, just go back to what was working for the show. I mean, the last couple seasons have... this one, certainly, but the last couple seasons have struggled. And I think that they need a little bit of a return to form. This definitely... I mean, granted, the first season was, the lowest scored because it had a lot of growing pains. But yes. This has been the lowest scored season since then.
Yeah.
So I think with good reason. So yeah, let's hope that they can get their house in order for season 5. So I can see a return to form being the order of the day. All right. Well, that is it for the episodic discussion. So let's see what we have next on our list. We have a little bit of feedback. So while I'm doing that, let me go ahead and try and bring that up. Okay. It's taking longer than I thought it would. It always does. It always does. There we go. A little bit of feedback from S. Elliot Fisher. He was basically asking just questions about Star Trek Beyond and the trailer that recently came out. And this is probably more of a question for Gary, unfortunately, but he was asking, is that an NX-class ship in the latest trailer? Actually, I do think that is true, S. Elliot Fisher. I think that that is, in fact, going to be a factor in the story from what little bit I've heard. I will say very little more other than to say it's right there on the film. If you go back and look, it is in fact there. So there we are.
Yeah, and I will just say that as someone who grew up with the original series back when we didn't have to say original series, I mean certainly the sense I've gotten from the trailer is as much as you can from these things, but certainly the idea of them trying to navigate and negotiate some sort of conflict on the ground with the slightly odd looking aliens was definitely feeling far more like the sort of storyline that we were used to back then, and to a certain extent with Next Generation as well. So I'm feeling cautiously optimistic.
Yes, I believe that's the right way to put it. Cautiously optimistic. Let's see. And that was it as far as that feedback was concerned, although we do have some others on some articles over on our Facebook page. But as I do that, Edmund, what have you been up to the last week or couple weeks? I guess a few weeks now, right?
I guess I just wanted to mention my reports on the other shows I'm watching or obsessing over. I had been mentioning Banshee as it was finishing up, but the other show which is now dominating my Sunday nights after Game of Thrones is the Return of Penny Dreadful over on Showtime. It's been kind of amusing me all of this talk out of Universal about their rebooted monster movie universe, there's part of me that keeps seeing those announcements and saying, well, why do we need to reboot the universe? We already have at this point just about all of the members of it showing up on Penny Dreadful since we have now met Dr. Hyde. Haven't seen Mr. Jekyll yet, but Victor Frankenstein is unbeknownst to himself working on that. I'm really thinking that now that they have ventured into the Wild West, going after Ethan, next season. We just suddenly have some people turning up in the Middle East around the pyramids. We can get the mummy in there and pretty much check off the entire checklist. And we don't need to go see the Universal movies. We already have them all on Penny Dreadful. But it has been continuing. It's rather extraordinary exploration of all these horror icons. Eva Green continues to be extraordinary. It's become a bit of a tradition for them to have an episode each season, which pretty much features her. This is a case of a literal bottle episode where it was going back to the period when she was incarcerated in the classic Victorian white padded room, and Rory Kinnear, who's does an extraordinary job with his makeup on as the monster, but he got a chance to take it off and show what he was like before Victor got his hands on him, and where in fact was the orderly, it was basically just an acting class for the two of them, but all building up to a rather extraordinary confrontation for her soul between Lucifer and Dracula, just marvelously done with a little bit of lighting effects and two wonderful actors just going going at it. So for those who haven't been following Penny Dreadful over the years, I can give it my absolute highest recommendation.
Yeah, I have not actually been able to watch it yet, but it does sound like the kind of show that would be good for binge watching.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. I wasn't able to find the feedback I was looking for, but I was able to come across this article that I don't know why it didn't make our news feed. This is pretty big.
Mm.
It's casting news.
Okay.
Gillian Anderson is the latest cast addition to the TV adaptation of American Gods.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes, I know. How did I miss that? I don't know. But yeah, this is yet the latest big name to join the cast for American Gods. She will be playing Media, the mouthpiece for the new gods, functioning as their public face and sales representative, taking the form of various iconic celebrities. Described as perky and always in control, the character lives off the attention and worship that people give to screens, their laptops, TVs, their iPhones, and so forth. So, yeah, big name joining the cast and in a pretty important role, actually. So, yeah, wow, this is a turning out to be quite the adaptation. Cast-wise.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is Neil Gaiman, so I'm not too worried about the actual content either. So,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, well, both Neil Gaiman and of course, Brian Fuller again as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between with him being on those two shows. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, and certainly, I'm sure her experience on Hannibal was one of the factors in the show's favor for her coming over.
Good point. I hadn't thought of that, but I'm sure that it was, because she had always said that she would have loved to have continued working with him on Hannibal. So yeah,
and also more tongue in cheek, but I don't know if you saw this, but of course Gillian Anderson has also popped up in the latest rumors about James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there was a fan who put together a little sort of teaser photo of how she might look as the iconic detective, just changing it to Jane Bond instead of James Bond.
I can't say that that's necessarily a bad thing, and we had just talked about possibly a female James Bond being one of the more extreme new directions that they could take.
Yes. Yeah. And so. Although of course, as it turns out, at the moment, the betting shops in England do seem to be placing Tom Hiddleston as the favorite. No surprise after The Night Manager, since there were various shots in that where that really did feel straight out of a Bond film. So not only is he being touted as the favorite to take over from Daniel Craig whenever he leaves, that's still a little up in the air, but he hasn't actually signed for the next films. But also Susan Beer, who was the director on The Night Manager, is also one of the people being considered to direct the next one as well.
Oh, well, doesn't that paint a picture? Interesting. All right. So as far as additional things or things that are open topics on my end, one thing that I've been doing quite a bit of lately is playing Uncharted 4. And I'm sure if Bronze Thumb were here, he'd be talking about how he's already finished it twice.
That might be one reason why he not only hasn't managed to show up, but he also hasn't been putting scores in recently.
Exactly. Yes, he might be distracted slightly. We'll have to see about dealing with that. But at any rate, I'm about, I would say, not quite 2/3 of the way through, but pretty close. And enjoying it quite a bit. Curious to see how this will turn out to be the end of the series, because that is in fact what they advertised it as. So a little bit of trepidation there as to what that's all going to add up to, but definitely enjoying it. It's a good game. And having a good time with it. And savoring it as the last little bit of this kind of storytelling from Naughty Dog. So a lot of fun. And beyond that, just catching up on all these season finales taking place again at the same time as season premieres. Yes, very soon it will be our usual rundown of everything that we covered over the last year or so, and this is the biggest list we've ever had. But we also have a lot of things that have been canceled or shows that we simply decided to stop covering, so that'll be an interesting topic to to address. But as far as reading or anything like that, I have been spending a good chunk of time when I'm not actually able to play Uncharted because of other people on the console, trying to catch up on my comics reading because of some of the more controversial spoilers that I've read lately. And I said, you know, it's about time I got caught up. It certainly will wait to talk about that topic until Gary is here, because I know that he is very passionate about it. So we'll give him his time. But yeah, I've been reading a lot of catching up on my backlog. I think I am now only a couple weeks behind, which considering that a month ago I was at least half a year behind. I've definitely ramped up, and I've been very selective on what it was that I needed to be fully caught up on versus just breezing through. Don't worry, I'm fully brought up to speed on Saga.
So, okay, good.
Yeah,
as you should be.
As I should be. And since I'm getting much closer to being ready or up to speed on that, I also have started reading the most recent Supernatural novel. It has been a couple years since they put out new novels in the novel line for Supernatural, but they just released one maybe about a month ago called Cold Fire, and I'm literally at only the beginning chapters of this book, but it's always nice to see a little bit extra Winchester action, especially now that the season is over. It's like a little bonus.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, was the hiatus because they had to wait for God to come back and write some more?
I believe that's what it was. Chuck was missing. He needed to come back before they could put out new novels in the line. Yes, and this but anyway, this one is set sometime in season 10, so it is during that period of time where there was a little bit more filler. So it actually makes sense for them to have some novels set during the period of time when they were maybe roaming around a little bit more between plot points. Hopefully, it doesn't have Rowena in it. I kind of shudder to think how they try to characterize her particular accent on the page. But
yes, that could be a little
tricky. Some Castiel would be nice. That would be fun.
Yeah, and actually, I just realized one other thing I could mention, because I just had to check next week's list just to see if we were covering it or not. And I realized I hadn't checked both, but speaking of Bronze Thumb and Things Down Under, Sundance TV did start a new series this week, or this past week, called Clever Man, which I did catch the premiere of. It's a sort of near future sci-fi premise, sort of playing off of some of the Aboriginal legends in Australia, and where there is a species that has turned up. I'm finding it's a little bit unclear in terms of whether this was an alien species, sort of a la District 9, or a matter of evolution. One thing that's intriguing about it is that it's all of the aliens or the Clever Man species are being played by Aboriginal actors. So it is certainly. Certainly with some of the turmoil that's gone on in Australia about that issue over the decades, and certainly the more recent political clashes over the treatment of migrants. It is obviously tapping into to some of the current social and political debates, but in the as ever with in the guise of science fiction. I did find the opening episode quite intriguing. Also has Ian Glenn in it, not being in a friend zone this time, but as the powerful and charismatic head of this television network, who is naturally working to take whatever advantage he can of the situation. Him in very very much more sort of a power broker sort of role, that is going to be playing out on Sundance. I believe it is on Wednesday evenings. For the next couple of months or so. Can definitely recommend that as something intriguing to check out. You know, and yeah, it's sort of, you know, I mean, I would say sort of District 9 would be except with, you know, with more human-looking human-looking aliens than in District 9, certainly. But you know, and also, you know, I'd say sort of District 9 meets Peter Weir in The Last Wave, because there was definitely that sense of, I mean, Peter Weir's movies, you know, or something like Walkabout, of that sense of the Aboriginal peoples and them having tapped into sort of more spiritual energies of the universe, sort of idea, and the sort of powers that it gives them. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, sort of as it turns, you know, because Sundance has been doing some rather interesting series in recent years, and this looks like just another in that trend.
Yeah, I had heard, I didn't have it on the list because I had heard some conflicting reports, I guess, on it would be the way to put it. So we'll maybe see what your reports are going forward on that one.
Sure.
Especially since we have a little bit more open-ended discussion during the summer months. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple other shows that are on that we're kind of on the fence with.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see. But that, I think, is it as far as those are concerned. I'm trying to think if anything else came up. I am going to be, hopefully, in the next week or so, catching X-Men Apocalypse. So
me as well. Yes. I haven't quite gotten to it yet. But
No, but what's interesting, and I'll see if this is one of those situations where expectations got knocked so low that there was the inevitable kind of bounce back. But it was getting just ripped to shreds in the weeks before it was released because of the early review cycle. And yet then a whole bunch of people I knew went to go see the movie, and they kind of had this kind of perplexing reaction and was like, what was the problem? So I'm wondering again, if this is one of those weird type of dissonance factors between, you know, critics and fans, because I mean, clearly there were some fans that, you know, this being comic book fandom and everything else, that there were people who were even more harsh than the critics were, but there were a whole lot of people that went and said, oh, you know, I knew this was the way things were going to go and blah, blah, blah. And then they came out of it and said, that wasn't nearly as bad as they made it sound. So I'll be curious when I see it, if where I fall as far as that's concerned. But when we do get a chance to reconnect, we will certainly probably talk about that as well. But that actually brings me to, as we can kind of wrap up this a little bit early, a little bit of a programming note. We will not have new episodes next week. We will next weekend when we would be recording, I will be away for the weekend, so we will be kind of skipping again. But some of you may have noticed that I got a little bit behind on the release of the podcast episodes on our feed. Everything has been up to speed on the VOG Network release, but the podcast itself has been about a week shifted. So I kind of let that go and let that happen because I figured it would be perfect since we weren't going to be able to record next week, and everything will eventually go on the proper release cycle. But this we kind of bought ourselves a week, and this is the week that we're going to be using that.
Yes, it was all your cunning plan.
Sure. Exactly, I guess. The nice thing is that at least during this time of year when we have to skip, we don't wind up with a massive, horrific list of episode discussion to try and get through in a short period of time. We get to still take our time a little bit, especially since we'll have two episodes of Game of Thrones in there.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. So we're going to go ahead, like I said, and wrap this week up. So any last thoughts, Edmund?
No, just enjoy your week off, and we will look forward to hearing about it next time.
All right. And so until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG Network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, We're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.